You're listening to the Extra Point Show from the Just Call Jed Studios. Injured? Call Jed.com. WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio is on his way. We're staying for a few minutes, and we're leading off with instant trivia. Hope you're ready.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to look at Twitter.
It's fine.
All I saw was the new Saints uniforms.
Right. You said there's new Saints uniforms, and I'm ready to see those, and I haven't seen those yet, so I need to...
So this is in addition to they announced a white helmet last week. The Saints are now going to wear a gold uniform with a black helmet and then the gold logo in the middle of it.
All right,
I like it.
I got to find it.
Looks good.
Who tweeted it that you saw?
The Saints.
You follow the Saints?
Someone retweeted them.
Okay, because I don't follow the Saints.
The New Orleans Saints. You don't follow the NFL teams?
No.
I don't either. The Bills would be the only account. I always feel that if the team accounts tweet something I need to see, that every NFL insider in the world is going to retweet them and I'll see them.
Right. Okay, so your instant trivia is this.
Mm-hmm.
There are three defensive ends, pass rushers, ever. Three players ever in NFL history with back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half sacks or more. Three ever. Who are they?
Three ever with back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half?
Yes.
Hendrickson.
Correct. That's how this comes up. Warren Sharp tweeting about Hendrickson. The Trey Hendrickson, who is driven to Florida rather than attend Bengals camp.
Yep.
35 sacks last 2 years. No other Bengal has more than eight. Hendrickson's sack rate is 3.8%. The rest of the Cincinnati defense is 1%. Less than 1%.
Wow.
His pressure rate is 17.5%. No other Bengal is at higher than 10%. So the other two players to have back-to-back seasons of 17 and a half sacks, there are only two others to ever do it.
Did Michael Strahan do it? He had the record, and then did he, like, around either before or after that one?
No. He did not.
Okay. Did Reggie White do it?
Yes. Reggie White is correct.
I feel like he could have done it multiple times.
Reggie White and?
Bruce?
No.
No? Reggie White, by the way, had 3 years in a row with 18 or more sacks.
Okay, I'm watching this video because the Saints did indeed.
It's like it's a video release.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what they look like?
What?
It's not the kind of gold I thought it would be. They look like Purdue.
Okay.
I thought the gold would be a little different. They look like Purdue.
Purdue.
Or maybe. Does Army sometimes wear this setup too?
Yeah.
They look like Purdue and they look like Army. I like them. I think they're good.
Yeah, they're very
good. And the helmets, these black helmets they're wearing are really nice.
Do you notice like they have like a texture at the top kind of? It's not a stripe, but it's like the dots or whatever.
It's not quite houndstooth. I don't know what it is, but it's nice. I think the Saints' new uniform setup is really nice. All right, anyway. The other player?
Top pass rushers of all time. What about like Dwight Freeney?
No.
Lawrence Taylor?
No. Reggie White, Trey Hendrickson, and blank. Back-to-back seasons with 17 and a half sacks.
Aaron Donald?
No.
He had 22 one year.
I think you're going to be mad at yourself.
For not getting this?
Yeah, I think so.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Not yet.
Ooh, good. Not yet. T.J. Watt?
Yes.
Yeah.
T.J. Watt. One of the best defensive players
How happy is Andrew Filippone that I said T.J. Watt before Myles Garrett? Said T.J. Watt.
No, sorry. Wrong.
Wait. What? What do you mean?
It was not T.J. Watt.
J.J. Watt.
Yes. J.J. Watt. Sorry.
Okay. One letter off.
I jumped on it. It's J.J. Watt, not T.J. Watt. J.J. Watt.
Okay. Yeah, he went 20.5 and then 17.5.
Yeah.
The 20.5 years of the year, he finished second in MVP voting, despite the fact that he had 20 and a half sacks, an interception return for a touchdown off E.J. Manuel, 5 receiving touchdowns on offense.
He did not have 5 receiving touchdowns on offense.
Yes, he did.
No, he did not.
Yes,
that didn't
did.
Happen. Those were all pick sixes.
Oh, wait a minute. He had He had a fumble. He had 5 touchdowns total. He had a receiving touchdown. He had a pick six for a touchdown. He had a fumble return for a touchdown. He had 3 receiving touchdowns on offense. He did have 3. But yeah, not 5.
Tom Pelissero reports this morning, as the Bills report to camp, sources say 2-time Pro Bowl running back James Cook will be there, though it remains to be seen how involved he'll be on the field.
Okay.
There you go. So Cook will be there.
Tom Pelissero reports a confirmation of a wonder that we already kind of had.
Yeah, a little bit.
Although it's a guarantee he'll be there. But we knew that. He said he would be there. So it would have been very strange. He would have gone back on that, on his word on that, if he would have not shown up.
I'm still looking at the Saints. The Saints uniforms look great.
The top of the helmet really is really
the helmet
sharp.
Is the star of the show.
Is
yes.
They're not dots, actually, though. They're the logo.
Right. The helmet is beautiful. The helmet is great.
Yeah.
It's a thick, a thick band that goes from the top of the helmet over the top of it vertically, I guess. And instead of dots, they're little fleur-de-lis, and it is perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great helmet.
Yeah. You know what's funny? We're hanging out a couple extra minutes here, and like the Bills are just waiting to hit publish until we're done off the air. It's like we stayed on air past 10:02. Like, oh, we're going to be here for it. Nope. Still nothing.
No.
Although Pete Guelli's picture is pretty definitive. There's going to be a red helmet, I think.
Sure looks like that way. Ian Rappaport quote tweets Tom Pelissero and says, a potential hold-in candidate. Which, here's a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do these NFL insiders think it is really possible, or are they just kind of acknowledging this is something we'll know within the next 24 hours? Should your antenna be up any further? Hey, Pelissero said it remains to be seen, and then Rappaport said he is a hold-in candidate.
I don't think this takes it any further than it already was.
Okay.
I'm in the same position. It could happen, but I'm not, my antenna's not up, really, for that. I mean, really, haven't the Bills kind of proved to him that they don't really feel the need to pay him what he wants?
Well,
what is he holding in for?
That we can't.
He's holding in to get them to $15 million as if he thinks the Bills are going to be more likely to give him $15
million? No, we can't know that. He might hold in to try to get them to 12 because they're at 9 and he would take 12. You know, just.
Yeah.
We can't treat the tweet and the lack of contract as the only two pieces of the negotiation just because the rest of it we don't know. Maybe he'd hold in to say, maybe there's an offer on the table for 2 years and 24. And he wants 3 years and 36 or 3 years 30 guaranteed. You know, we always paint these contract disputes as they don't want to pay him and he wants a lot. And the reality is that, like, I wish we could know that. What's the smallest amount of money a team and a player have ever split over? $572,000 and the guy hits the market. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at the Bengals Shamar Stewart thing right now and the littlest little thing that's keeping him off all their OTA stuff and minicamp and now training camp.
The best example I can think of this is the Sabres and Tim Kennedy. Remember that? Seriously, like Tim Kennedy, the Sabres would have had an offer. He went to arbitration. He won, then they walked away.
They bought him out.
Or whatever it was. But
yeah, he went to arbitration. He got a good deal maybe for what he was looking for, and then the Sabres bought him out.
And it was over.
Yeah.
And that was not over a large amount of money, and it wasn't that they were unwilling to pay him at all. It was just they weren't going to go to a number, and he wanted that number, and then
right. It
kind of forced the situation. So in the case of Cook, could he hold in? Again, they're saying he's a candidate to do so. And if he does, he would be asked about it. That's the kind of thing where a player doesn't ever do that. They don't say what the numbers are. Imagine a player. Imagine Cook just saying, like, yeah, I mean, I tweeted 15. I'd take 12. Their offer is 9.2.
Right.
You could just say all that. I feel like it would go over pretty poorly.
The team might not be happy.
You would certainly
about that.
Anger the team, but that information we don't have it, and it's in the realm of possibility. I'm not telling you that I know it, just that I can't treat it like 15 is the only number he would ever take.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the Hard Knocks piece of it, which Would he get featured if he's holding in?
Yes.
For sure?
Not only would he get featured, coaches would be asked about it. The most high-profile holdout I can remember on Hard Knocks, there's probably been others, but Revis. Revis was holding out. When the Jets were on Hard Knocks, Revis was holding out.
Right.
And I can remember Rex going in to meet the GM. And that's like that was a great look at this. And this kind of gets to the Bengals and Shamar Stewart. I've got the Bengals director of player personnel saying that he thinks Shamar Stewart, he's got a reason to hold out here. Like, he's fine. He's not mad about it. The owner is. And right. Rex, on that Hard Knocks, is in there meeting with a GM. Who would that have been at the time? Like, Mike McCagney? Is that a person?
That sounds... Or it was Jeff Ireland? Remember him? That's the Dolphins.
Mike McCagnan?
That sounds familiar.
Sal, come on in. Is Mike McCagnan a person? Is that a former Jets GM? Am I making that up? What was his name?
It's got to be.
It's close.
McCagnan sounds familiar.
Yeah, Mike McCagnan. Okay, 2015, 2018. That's right.
Look at you knowing.
That's a guy, Mike McCagnan.
Jets GMs.
Huh?
Isn't he the GM now?
Did he get the job back from Joe Douglas? Joe Douglas was the guy who got fired. Who's the GM?
Right. Who's the GM now?
Darren Moogie.
Okay.
Moogie, that's right. M. Yeah. He came from Denver.
So anyway, what I'm getting at is...
McCagnan was the guy before that.
The best thing I ever saw, the best contract looking on a Hard Knocks was Rex going into Mike McCagnan or whoever and saying, is this done yet? What are we doing? I need this guy. It was a look at a front office kind of bickering within its own ranks of a coach wants a player. Why isn't it done? Like, Rex is over here like, I don't care about the cap. Get me my guy. So...
Right. I think that most coaches would probably feel that way with a lot of guys, but if it ever comes to a head, and that's the question, and it probably did in that situation. Thanks, guys, for hanging out an extra few minutes here. I had a bit of a technical issue over at Studio Capaccio, so I had to come in, and it took me a minute, and ready to rock and roll. We got Eric Wood at 10:30 coming up here after a timeout. You know, start a camp, what it's like. I was on Eric's podcast this morning, actually recorded, but we'll do that. Matt Perino at 11, and Pat Hammer at 11:30 on what the weather's going to be like for anybody going out to Fisher.
Very good. Chris Brown has it. Mike Tenenbaum was the GM at the time. But I was right that Mike McCagnan is a person.
Yes, you are right about that.
I'm taking credit for that. All right. So, all right, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Coming up next.
All right, very good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes at training camp. He almost didn't take you anywhere today. Technology is an amazing thing, isn't it? It is awesome. Remember yesterday we had the discussion, Josh, about Kathy, who went on the Italy trip with me, and she has no cell phone. She's never had one. She's 70-something years old. She's not on the internet. And we're like, mad love respect to Kathy, right? I'm like, that would have been like good today because I realized I need my phone and this bit of technology on the phone to hook up to you in the production room to put me on the air. And yesterday, there was an issue with it, and I totally forgot about that. So I'm at home today. I'm like, wait a minute. I can't do the show the way I normally do. I got to go to the station. By then, it was already 9:45. So I called you. You're like, hey, I'll get the guys to stick around. So I appreciate that. Thanks for the assist here.
It's funny. I was sitting here from like 9 to 9:30, and I'm like, wow, Sal's usually here by now. I wonder what's going on. I hope everything's okay. And then
No, my plan was to be home today, get ready for camp, pack my stuff. You know, I got to do some shopping. I still have to go get some here odds and ends. As I've told everybody, I do not camp, I glamp, okay? I have my coffee maker I bring into the dorm, okay? I'm ready to rock and roll. I get everything I need, right? There's nothing I don't want for at camp. So today was the day to kind of get all of that ready. So anyway, thank you very much to Jeremy and Joe. These things happen sometimes. We've only gone a few extra minutes here, and they had to stay around a little bit. So you guys aren't getting overtime. I talked to the bosses. You're not getting overtime for staying around for an extra few minutes. I just want you to know that. But maybe I'll buy him a drink or something at St. John Fisher. We're all going to be there tomorrow. Bills training camp starts tomorrow. and we're going to be on the air. They're going to start at 6 a.m. out there in next to Grounie Stadium. I will be with them at 7 a.m. from right there on campus. And then, of course, on the practice field at 9:45. And before that, it'll be Sean McDermott at 9:15 a.m. on at St. John Fisher. So we're going to hear from him. We also will hear tomorrow from Brandon Bean. Brandon Bean is scheduled to talk to the media after practice tomorrow. So we'll hear from Sean McDermott before practice, Brandon Bean after practice. We also know today, or at least we have a report, I should say, today that just came over a little while ago, Tom Pelissero from NFL Network is reporting that James Cook will be at Bills training camp tomorrow. The question is how much he will do once he's at training camp tomorrow. This is, as Ian Rappaport reported, a potential hold-in situation. We've talked about this scenario. Could James Cook show up but not participate? Here's the question I've had about this since we started with this whole James Cook thing and we thought about this possibility with him. How does that end? Like, what if James Cook decides to hold in? The way I know Brandon Bean, the way I know what Brandon Bean operates, he's not going to get strong-armed and to suddenly give him a whole bunch of money because he's panicking. It's not the way Brandon Bean operates. It's just not. So what would the purpose of James Cook's hold in be? I mean, I get the theory behind it, which would be, hey, I'm not going out there and getting injured when I play this position where I take a beating on my body and this is my last year of my contract and I want more money and I want guarantees. This is the way everybody thinks, right? Everybody. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way football players should think, quite frankly. Any athlete who plays this kind of sport or a violent sport and has potential for injuries. Everybody wants to get their money and be secure just in case something were to happen and they don't get their money. Okay? I get that from his side. But the other side of it is, what is he trying to accomplish with the negotiation part of it, if that's the case? And I don't know if James Cook is going to hold in. Based on what happened at minicamp, he'll be on the field and he'll play. And he'll, I mean, he said, hey, and I had a lot of respect for him when he said, look, I'm here to be with my teammates and it's important for me to be here and win and you want to win a Super Bowl. And I like that. But when I see Ian Rappaport quote tweet Tom Pelissero and write a potential hold-in candidate, well, that gets me thinking, all right, well, let's say he does hold in. How does that end? I can't see Brandon Bean just handing over the bag to James Cook because he's holding in. He's going to say, okay, I'm going to roll with Ray Davis and Ty Johnson. Maybe it moves the needle a little bit because, you know, you do have a little bit of pressure on each side. James Cook wanted to play with his team and Brandon Bean wanting him as a part of the team and Sean McDermott wanting to be on the field. Yeah, I get all that. But how much does it really move the needle from where they may be? Like, I fully believe that the Bills and James Cook have talked about a contract extension. Well, I don't think that this is a situation where the Bills have said, we're not talking because we're not extending you. We don't want you here. One of the things that people ask me about James Cook all the time, the way they phrase it is, well, do you think the Bills, why won't the Bills pay James Cook? Or do they not want to pay him or something like that? I'm like, no, that's not the case. Like, the Bills want James Cook on the team. And I think they want to keep him here long term. They just disagree on what the value of that is. This isn't a scenario where it's all or nothing. And, oh yeah, we either want to pay him to be here or we just don't want him on the team. It's, yeah, we want you to be here, but it's got to work for us. And what, from the Bills' side, what makes sense, the value of this particular player. That's how that works. I think the Bills and James Cook have had conversations based on what Brandon Bean has told us, but he also tells us, you know, he's not going to negotiate through the media. You don't expect him to do that. He doesn't reveal the details of that. But if you go back to the combine, you go back to the owners' meetings, you go back to anything we've talked with Brandon Bean, OTA's minicamp, about James Cook, there's never been a hint of we haven't communicated. There's never been a hint of we don't want him around. It's always been in some way, shape, or form that they've talked to his representatives. Now, he also kind of made it clear at the owners' meetings that, yeah, we've tabled it because We couldn't get to an agreement, so we pivoted over to Terrell Bernard and Khalil Shakir and Greg Rousseau and Christian Benford, right? Those guys got that's who they focused on because it was clear they weren't going to get something done with James Cook. But by telling us that, he's also telling us we've spoken with them, which tells me they want to sign James Cook. They just disagree on what the value is. How does that end, though? That's what, if James Cook holds in, I'm just so curious on what is he trying to accomplish? How does that end? Because you're not going to get Brandon Bean to suddenly just say, oh yeah, he's not practicing, give him what he wants. Like, that's not how he operates. It also could be a one-day hold-in if he does it, right? Like, I'm going to make a statement. It's not going to work out today. Not going to be doing these things that just to show that, you know, I want to get paid and to kind of make a headline. I can see that. We'll see where it goes, though. We also have Bills and Sabres, by the way. COO Pete Guelli tweeting a picture of his dorm room very sneakily with the red helmet in there. A red helmet and a bag. I like that. That's a good tease, Pete. That's a great tease. He's got his backpack. He's got his laptop. He's got a few caps. He's got a red helmet sticking out of a bag. You see the top of the red helmet coming out. So that has fueled speculation that the Bills will be wearing a red helmet this year. A guy that wore the red helmet for the Buffalo Bills when he was first drafted by the team as a first rounder. Center and now color analyst in the Buffalo Bills radio network, Eric Wood, joins me on the Wester Hotline to talk about the Bills beginning training camp. I was on Eric's podcast this morning. We'll talk about that in a little while, but Eric, first of all, good morning. Thanks. Good to talk to you again for this time around. I appreciate that and you coming on here. I have to ask you, what do you think about maybe the Bills wearing a red helmet for a game this year?
Yeah, all these rumors are circling. They've kind of made it known that they're going to, you know, potentially pay tribute to the past this season with the final year at Highmark. I would love to see them wear the 90s uniform with the red helmet, the blue jerseys, the white pants. I just think that's an awesome look. I don't think they need to go back to the 2000s red helmet look that we started with in my career with the navy blue mixed in there and all that. I would love to see it. I hear there's rumors where it might be a gray Buffalo, a white and gray look. I'm not sure. I would love to see it, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. How much did you care about uniforms when you played at the NFL level? Some guys, you want to look great. Of course you do. But was there ever a time where you're like, oh, my God, these are sweet, or I don't really love these things?
I loved when we made the switch. Now, look, I'm an offensive lineman. I'm not going to look that pretty in a uniform regardless. But I thought the switch back to the classic royal blue, the uniforms we're wearing now, a few years into my career, we switched to those. I thought that was a much better look. Started my career where the stripes on the side didn't even match. I thought those were pretty bad, but honestly, you know, you're putting on an NFL uniform and you're grateful to do it. You're not concerned about it throughout the game, what you look like. You're worried about getting your job done. But I'd say there was, you know, a lot. There's a good amount of people that are concerned what they look like throughout the game as far as uniform goes. And the switch was very welcomed into the locker room. One thing I liked is I always liked wearing white cleats. When I got to the Bills, we had to wear black cleats. I didn't think they looked great with our uniforms. And then Jeff Mazurek made the switch where we could go to the white cleats, which I also thought was a good look.
Before I get to the Bills and training camp, I know that you're out there. You grew up, you know, following the Cincinnati Bengals a bit. You still have friends over there in the Bengals organization. Trey Hendrickson not reporting for the Bengals. That's a report today. How does that hit over there where you live?
Well, it's big news. I mean, he's one of the best defenders in all of football. That's a defense that was terrible last year. They're also one of the worst starting teams in the NFL under Zach Taylor. I believe in his first four seasons, they're 1-7 in their first two games of the season over the last 4 years. I believe that's correct. And, you know, this is a team that's followed that Sean McVay model of training camp where, you know, we're not going to play our starters at all in the preseason. It's kind of 2 days on, one day off, as opposed to most teams that are 4 days on, one day off. And they just have started the season terribly. And you're starting now training camp without one of your best. And, you know, they paid both those receivers. They paid Joe Burrow. It's hard to have four guys that are near the top of your position, you know, salary wise. And look, he's a heck of a ball player. He's done everything right since he's been in Cincinnati. He came in by a free agency, you know, is always available. You know, I'd assume they have to get something done there, but it doesn't look good. And then they also have their first round draft pick holding out right now. And, you know, that Brown family has been notoriously cheap running the Bengals organization. And we'll see how this one shakes out.
Eric Wood on the West Hur Hotline. Bills open training camp tomorrow morning. All right, Eric, take us into a player through the various stages. You were a guy that came in as a first-round pick, a rookie, your first camp, all the way through when you kind of had a few years under your belt till when you became a veteran and went through a few coaching changes. The evolution of a player and what's going through their heads at their different stages, if you can.
Yeah, you know, you come in a rookie and you're just, you know, kind of feeling it out. And then, you know, as your career goes on, you know what to expect with training camp. Maybe the nerves aren't there quite as much heading up to Rochester. And, you know, I always really enjoyed training camp. I thought it was an awesome opportunity to get better. Now, I was never really in a position to get cut. Even when I was heading into contract years, we would always get a contract done. And, you know, I knew I was going to be on the team each year, so I could really just try and hone my craft. But also I had to be really sensitive that there's a long the roster that's not going to be on the team that are fighting for their job each and every day out there. And so try and help the young guys along later in your career. But I always enjoy training camp. Now, the 1 year where we were up there for 5 weeks because our facility was being redone, that was a little extreme. But I was a guy that really enjoyed training camp, looks forward to, you know, kind of connecting with the guys offsite. You hear that from a lot of the players where, you know, a lot of people have families. You know, we don't necessarily live right next to each other during the season. And so training camp's a way that you can come a lot closer as a team. And I always appreciated that we went away. I always loved Rochester. Me and Kyle Williams get our yearly Oak Hill round in right before the start of training camp and get to play a little golf and then hang the sticks up for the rest of the season. Because after that first round of training camp, or right before training camp starts, as an O lineman or a D lineman, your body's not going to feel good enough to play the rest of the year.
What advice would you give any rookie as far as body and preparation before they walk into their first camp at St. John Fisher?
Yeah, you know, nowadays, you know, strength conditioning so big, but and they're going to leave, you know, you get a few weeks off over the summer, but you got to keep training. You want to come into training camp in great shape. In great physical shape, is well a condition that you could possibly be, so that you can simply hit the ground running and you're not trying to get your legs under you and trying to play yourself into shape. Old days when there was 8 weeks of training camp, that's when you got into shape. Now you got to come in great shape, and you know the Bills do a little I think that's the start, but it's not much of a test. It's more just, hey, let's get these guys moving, make sure no one's way out of shape where they can go out and injure themselves. And so which I think Alan Branch might be the only person that I've ever seen fail the Bills conditioning test heading into training camp. But my advice would be, come in great shape so you don't have to worry about your conditioning level, and then find a couple veterans, see what their daily routine is, take bits and pieces, make it your own routine, and then figure out how they study, how they watch film, and that way you can really kind of progress through your career a little bit quicker.
You had a training camp, you know, with different coaches, different head coaches, different styles, different times of day. I mean, you know, there were more night practice maybe under Chan Gailey. There were more later afternoon practices under Rex Ryan. Sean McDermott likes to do, you know, morning practices. What does a Sean McDermott training camp look like and feel like for a player?
Well, I think it's a little different now because he's really toned it back to be able to maximize their sleep. One of the things that they've kind of leaned into on their research is, you know, instead of keeping us up till 10:30 at night and then you got to wake up sometimes at 5:30 to go do rehab before practice and all that, they're giving him some more time off in the evenings now. But, you know, Sean's the type of guy, he likes to get up early, so do I, get practice, I don't want to say out of the way, but practice when it's a little bit cooler in the morning where you can kind of maximize what you can get out of the guys as opposed to getting them out in the heat later in the afternoon where you got to pull back a little bit just based upon the heat. But, you know, I believe he's loosened up a little bit. Training camp, I only did one under Sean back in the day, and it was a grind, but we needed it. You know, that was a team that was trying to break the drought. We had a lot of guys that needed to get better, go out and hit a little bit, and I believe over the years they've toned that back a little bit, but with a Sean McDermott training camp, it's going to be a lot of competition. There's a lot of ones versus ones where, you know, you're trying to see what you got out on the field. And we talked about it this morning on the podcast. There's not a ton of jobs up for grabs starting wise, but there's plenty of depth spots where they got to actually go out and play football to be able to evaluate those guys during practices.
We know there is, I think, one legitimate competition that's going to happen, and that is Tre'Davious White and Max Harrison, or anybody else, I guess, at corner opposite Christian Benford. Knowing the way the Bills operate, Tre'Davious White knowing the system, re-signing him, but also having a first-round pick that they spent on Max Harrison, how do you expect reps to go and this to play out as far as the Bills' evaluation? Maybe not even a prediction who actually wins the job, but how do they go about deciding who wins the job?
Yeah, I think they'll rotate those guys because they want them both to be going against similar competition throughout practices. And so I expect those guys to, you know, maybe it's every other day they work with the starters. It could be every other series of practice. One of those guys is with the starters. And to me, I love the Trey White signing. He gives you a lot of stability there. You know what you're going to get, or you think you know what you're going to get with the Tre'Davious White after being healthy last season. But to me, I'd love to see them kind of just throw Max Harrison into the fire, let him maybe take his lumps early in the season, but then allow him to progress to where towards the end of the season, he's not playing like a rookie anymore. And I just love his upside, love his athleticism. And I mean, he's got a guy like Tre'Davious White he can learn from. He can see him in the system playing the same spot. But I think week one, I'd expect to see Harrison out there.
Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline. Eric, obviously, you put a long time in this league in the offensive line. You've played for the Bills' current offensive line coach, Aaron Cromer. You sung his praises. I agree. I think he's a terrific offensive line coach. I take my cues from you when people ask me, and I say, Eric Wood always says that Aaron really does a great job of tailoring his coaching to each individual player, their body type, their style. It's not just one size fits all. It's you really have to do that. Having 10 guys returning, all starters, all backups, and Aaron Cromer as their coach, how big of a benefit can that really be for the Buffalo Bills?
Well, it's tremendous because you're not working on chemistry, whether that's with the coach, whether that's with the guys playing around you. You're simply going to training camp and you're saying, okay, how can I get better individually? How can I get better as a group? Not, you know, how's our footwork going to be on this block? And you can really kind of hit those next stages. And you know, Aaron Cromer is going to be teaching offensive line play 401. They're not starting at 101 like they likely did with him trying to teach techniques and whatnot a few years ago when he came back to the Bills. And so it's a tremendous benefit. I mean, their offensive line is one of the tops in the league, and it has been for a while. And at times they take some criticism, and we always talk about it on the broadcast, and part of that's because people are just watching them each and every week, and they're not watching O-line play from around the league. But the Bills have so much depth on their offensive line right now. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me to see Brandon Bean try to maybe flip one of those guys late at the end of the preseason for maybe a draft pick, maybe a player where if you get dinged up during training camp in the preseason where they need some depth at a different position. I mean, they are loaded on the offensive line.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so they go there. They have this whole thing play out at the end of the day. You got a few guys there. Who's a guy maybe you look at that maybe you never know? Maybe you could steal a spot. You know, they draft Chase Lunt. They got a couple of guys in the picture in the back end. Richard Garage, there a guy there you say, you know what, I wouldn't be stunned. It might be tough, but this guy's going to compete.
Yeah, I mean, last year the surprise was Tylan Grable, and then he got dinged up early in the season, and Ryan Vandermark, you know, took over that swing spot, but throughout training camp and at the end of the preseason, Tylan Grable had earned that job.
That's
right. And so is he a guy that becomes the swing guy? You mentioned Chase Lunt, you know, whether he can be a guy that, you know, makes the initial 53 or a guy maybe he becomes one of your developmental guys on the practice squad, like a Ryan Vandermark. You know, they brought in Kendrick Green, and, you know, he had a meniscus tear in Houston. He started early in his career for Pittsburgh, a guy that brings in some experience, but then you got like a Cedric Van Granger who got some experience last year, was on the 53, and I mean, they're loaded. I don't know if there's any true surprises there, but I think one of the fun position battles that's going to be, we're going to watch throughout the preseason games and throughout training camp is who's that swing guy behind both those tackles, because they got two good ones in Grable and Vandermark, and it wouldn't surprise me to see them maybe work Grable in at some guard throughout training camp as well, just to see, okay, what kind of position flexibility does he have? If we feel very comfortable with Vandermark as our backup swing tackle, can Grable now pop inside if we need him to?
Yeah, and then finally, Eric, Alec Anderson's going to be a very interesting guy because, you know, he's a guy that has been the sixth offensive lineman. They now have Jackson Hawes. Maybe you can transition him to allow him to be a little bit more of the swing guy. How important is it? You had guys like that. You had Ryan Groy. You had Ryan Bates, you know, when you played, and you know of the guys that have been around this team that have had that job. How important is a guy like Alec Anderson, what his versatility can provide this team?
He's extremely important and obviously plays a lot in that 6-0 line package. He's an asset there. He brings an attitude. They're out there. A guy that we would say plays through the whistle on each and every play, gets in the guys' heads on the opposite side of the ball. But a guy like that's valuable. And the Bills have been fortunate to stay healthy on their offensive line for the most part the last couple of years. But, you know, injuries happen in the NFL. To have a guy like that that's got experience in game, even if it's at tight end, he's been out on the field. It's not going to shock him if he has to go into the game in any of those positions. Then, you know, looking towards the future, you know, Osiris Torrence at some point is going to get paid a ton.
Yeah.
And you already got two really high-paid tackles. Connor McGovern's contract's going to expire, I believe, after this year. And then also David Edwards. And so how does that look moving forward? Because you can't pay everybody. Is an Alec Anderson a guy that can fill in one of those two spots potentially next year?
All right, buddy. Thanks. I really appreciate you doing this. Let's tell everybody about a longer conversation we had this morning and where everybody can find that.
Yeah, so Center on Buffalo podcast. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it anywhere you find your podcast. That'll release on Thursday morning. Fun conversation between the two of us. We go through each and every position group, talk about the position battles, all the storylines. It's always a fun conversation when we get together on those two. So that'll come out this Thursday morning. I think everyone's going to enjoy it.
All right. Well, listen, I will see you in a few weeks. First preseason game. Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Another year on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network with Chris Brown, Eric Wood, and me and the whole gang that helps bring it to you. So thanks a lot for doing this. And, of course, Centered on Buffalo. Everybody can find a longer conversation. Have a great day, buddy.
Yep, you too. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Yeah, you got it. That is Eric Wood, former Buffalo Bills center. And, of course, radio color analyst on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. I do have an article up at WGR550.com I want to touch on, which is one storyline for each defensive position. We'll do that, but also Matt Perino from Syracuse.com, the Shout podcast. He joins me at 11 a.m. here on the final Extra Point show before training camp starts tomorrow. All right, head over to WGR550.com. That's where I have my not only every one storyline for every offensive position yesterday and specialist yesterday, but today, one storyline for every defensive position. And I think the biggest storyline, I think the two biggest storylines of camp are one that's more short-term, one that's more long-term. The short-term is more James Cook because we're going to kind of find out. But that could become long-term, right? And then more the long-term is the highlight of this particular article on the defensive side is what happens at cornerback two. And as I was just talking with Eric Wood about a little while ago here on the Extra Point Show, like how do you determine how you get there? How does the team determine how to get there? Not necessarily saying who's going to win the job, but how do they determine who's going to win the job, right? That's to me, a lot of it's that more fascinating even. Which is, how do they divide up the reps? Why are they dividing up the reps a certain amount of ways? How do they play in the preseason? I would suspect Max Harrison gets quite a bit of run in the preseason because you kind of know what Tre'Davious White is and what he can do. Now, you still need to see it from Tre'Davious White. He is still coming off. You know, last year was the first year off that last injury he had, the Achilles, and you still want to see him go out there and perform, but you kind of know. So, I think Max Harrison probably gets a lot more run in the games, the preseason games. But how does it work in practice? Is he getting more reps? Do we go out there on tomorrow and Trey is out there, you know, 70% of the time with the ones, 100%. And then all of a sudden the next day it's a little less and the next day it's a little less. Does that give an indication of how they're bringing Max Harrison along and they want him to win the job or at least give him every opportunity to win the job, which I think they will. And he's progressing with that. Because one thing I'll tell you is they're not going to put him on the field if they don't feel he's ready. Don't we already know that about how the Bills handle younger players? There is a narrative. I don't love the word, but it's true, a narrative that Sean McDermott just doesn't play younger players. It's not true, but he won't play them if they're not ready. Like, he needs to be absolutely sure. But he plays younger players. For crying out loud, Christian Benford started as a sixth-round pick as a rookie in week one. Osiris Torrence played week one and played every single game and every single snap as a rookie. Rookies do play under this coach. They do, folks. I promise you. But you got to trust them. And maybe, and there's an argument to be made, that sometimes maybe the coach can go a little too far with, I don't know if I trust him enough, and you should throw him out there a little sooner and throw him a little bit more, give him that experience, those reps. I get that. But I don't expect Max Harrison to be on the field unless at that position, how important it is, how critical it is early in the season, unless they absolutely trust that he knows what to do, where to be, understands the defensive concepts, and is not going to make mistakes. Because I think they believe that with Tre'Davious White. The difference is you might not get the high-end play, the ceiling with Trey that you might get with Max Harrison. And that's what you have to balance. But I think the first thing to balance is don't put yourself in a position where you're going to lose the game. Don't lose the game before you can win it. That might sound conservative. And you may think that that's a, yeah, you're sitting there going, oh, no. Just go out there and who cares if he gets beat? Yeah, you care. Who cares until it actually happens and you say, oh, my God, I can't believe he just got beat deep on that. Because I saw it last year when it happened once in a while, a couple of times with DeMar Hamlin, like in the playoff game. Right? I mean, he was steady as you go, but as soon as you get beat deep, it's like, okay, you need something better there and different. So, yeah, I just think it's going to be really interesting. We'll take a timeout. When we come back, Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, the Shout Podcast. We are all ready for training camp. I think we are. We're going to ask Matt if he's ready for training camp. It all comes your way next in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And by the way, of course, you can get connected here on the show at 803-0550. And when you do, that's getting connected with our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at NorthtownKia.com. Matt Perino up next.